Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mike Armstrong podcast show. And this evening, or afternoon stateside, we're joined by Sion Nanton, who is a poet from NYC, New York City. So how are you doing today, Sion? You okay?
Hey, yeah. What's up, Mike? I am doing super. It's a rainy day here in New York, so there isn't really much getting out. And at work, we're all remote. And the work day is over, so I'm just in for the day.
Okay, good. So, yeah, nothing much happening this evening. So I guess you'll be on Clubhouse then, because that's where we met. And are you on there a lot?
Yeah, I'm on Clubhouse a lot. A lot of times I tend to look and see where the poetry may be, but I also check out rooms like the Creativity House and Clubhouse. And then I saw this... Screw small rooms, room
no,
that
screw,
was
screw
on.
The
and
big rooms. Screw the big rooms.
Screw the big rooms, rather. Screw the big rooms. I saw Screw the Big Rooms on there. I said, oh, man, that must be, it's pretty interesting. So I was listening to some folks talk about all manner of things, including, soccer, as we call it in the States, football, as it's called everywhere else. They were talking a little bit about that, which is one of my favorite sports. And they were just talking about creativity and the like. And so it was just really interesting there. So I just hang out on Clubhouse a lot of times, especially if, you know, my students are like independently reading and I have no reason for my mic to be on. I just like, you know, listen on Clubhouse. Sometimes I'll participate, sometimes I wouldn't, but I'm there quite often.
Yeah, good. Well, you know, for creative people and for networkers and collaborators and all that sort of thing, it's an awesome place because, you know, you can teach and you can learn and you can chat and you can listen and you can, you know, collaborate. And, you know, it's just, you know, so much creativity, so much knowledge, so much information you can gain. You've got to be careful where you get your information from and, you know, make sure you're going to genuine people and genuine sources. My whole experience is I generally don't go to a lot of the rooms. I just set my room up 24/7 and people come to me. And I love to learn off others. I love to meet people from all over the world. And luckily, I seem to attract people from all around the world and from all sorts of sectors. And I'm not, you know, just into one thing or another. I'm into everything. So I just keep learning and expanding my knowledge and my contacts and my connections just by standing still and just waiting for people to come in, like, you know?
Yeah, the best thing, because the best thing what it does is it broadens your horizons. And that's kind of one of the things I really felt about the platform is that it gives it a more genuine feel, because a lot of times when you have, you know, video platforms like TikTok or things like Instagram, a lot of times there is a certain level. It's not a knock on anybody that likes those platforms, but it's like a certain level of rehearsedness, a certain bit of the fact that it's staged there. Whereas, you know, you are on a mic, you are just going off the cuff.
Yeah. It's unplanned, unscripted, unrehearsed, unedited, you know, unphotoshopped, all of those things. It's just, you know, live, raw, and, you know, real, really. It's just in your face real. And that's what I like about it as well. So, tell us a little bit about the poet. You know, you're a poet. You like all the poetry rooms. Tell us, you know, how you got into poetry and what you now do as a poet.
Right. So I started writing, I would say, where I started really considering my work as something I might want to read later on was back in the day when I was like 14 years old. I was around the same age of my students. And I started getting into it and I started writing things. And I initially started writing like, you know, your more rebellious pieces, your more rebellious kind of poetry, because, you know, I was really fighting the power, as it were, fighting the authorities, so to speak. And the authorities was represented in the person of my principal. So I had a lot of anti-principal poems back in the day. And nowadays I have taken it more seriously down the time. I have a podcast called Haiku Vibes. And what I do with that is haiku is one of my favorite forms of poetry. And during the pandemic, you know, it was a really trying time for all of us mentally throughout the world. And what I decided that, you know, I wanted to do was really just sort of create something, you know, calming, and to be able to share my haikus in a way that gave, you know, 1 minute meditations and breathing exercises. Cause I figured, okay, maybe if I can help one other person, that would be great. If I can help one person, to, you know, relax and focus with a haiku and a little breathing exercise. And since then, the show, the episodes have really refined. They've really grown in a way that I did not envisage back when I started it last summer in 2020. You know, I got a more serious mic setup and even, and just really started taking it a lot more seriously. I also have two collections of poetry that are out. Those were independently published, and I have a manuscript that is not independently published, you know, and I'm just waiting for words and stuff on that. You know, you have a lot less control when you don't independently publish. So I just have to wait for word on when that release is going to come out. But my current publication is called Psychedelic Mixtape, and that doesn't have much to do with haikus. And I really kind of want to capture the spirit of like the Beatles and Bob Dylan and kind of talk about some of the stuff that they talked about there, and really just brought a sort of modern twist on the psychedelic era of music. The psychedelic era is really what inspired that book. So I called it a mixtape because it's just a mixture of different poetic styles, different types of poetry, and that. So that's what Psychedelic Mixtape would be. So that's available just about in any bookstore, especially if you're shopping online, you know. Amazon and all those. My friends in the UK would see it on Waterstones as well. Yeah. You know, and I have it available at Barnes & Noble's here in the States.
Yeah. Okay, so good. Yeah,
that's a little bit of what...
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it and listen or look at some of the work or whatever. So that's interesting, you know, a mixtape, because, you know, a lot of music these days is mixed from the past and, you know, re-edited and reformulated and that sort of thing. And you're doing the same with the poetry styles and the words. So, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like, you know, as I said, I had originally written the works and so on, but I've did a lot of listening to music as I wrote these you know, poetry and all of that, and to just get into the frame of mind of that culture, the late sort of 60s psychedelic sort of cannabis and anti-authoritarian sort of poetry culture, you know, that's kind of the vibe that you're going to get from that book.
Yeah, brilliant. And you mentioned about haiku poetry. Explain to those less in the know, explain to them what that is, what type of poetry is, and maybe some examples of it, etc.
Sure, absolutely. So, haikus are a Japanese style of poetry. Generally speaking, like in Japan, which is a more like intonation language, a language of intonation, it's broken up a little bit differently. English haikus, we always talk about syllables. So 5-7-5, yeah, is like your general haiku. That's the format that I use for all of my haikus, and I write them in English. Yeah. So, you know, so it's like that. Generally speaking, if you're going to go traditionally, you want to start off with a theme of nature. Something from the natural world you pull from. So I use a lot from the natural world in my haiku. And I can actually read one of the haikus I have in a current episode rather than just playing it. So to kind of give you a sense of how that goes, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, perfect. So... And the cool thing is, on the podcast, I have I had my wife read a few of them as well, just to kind of give a female voice to some of the poems. She volunteered to do it, and I thought that she has a great voice. So I said, why not? You know?
Yeah. Good.
So
it's nice to bring her in on what you're doing as well. Get her involved.
Yeah, man. Make it a family business.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to read this one that I wrote. She actually performed it on the podcast, but I wrote this one. And it's called Focus on Water. So here goes. Focus on water. Listen to its spirit call and go with the flow. So as a haiku, that fits the 575 model. Uh-huh. It fits into the 575 model. But, you know, on the actual podcast episode, you know, I have like sounds of streams and things like that going around that was recorded. I even play with the sound of the singing bowl, the Tibetan singing bowl. And then I have like the breathing cues. So that the breathing cues sound kind of come in between the lines and at the end of the poem. So it kind of just allows the user to participate, you know, while breathing along.
It sounded a bit like a meditation, you know, the sort of meditations you get on YouTube, you know, help you sleep or whatever. It sounded a bit, you know, that inclined.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the way that I kind of thought about it, I was like, well, you know, we have all these different sort of meditation apps, all these sort of different things. But I said, you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes out of someone's day, it's not a lot to ask, you know. It's not a lot to ask. And it's something that somebody can easily do. Like I had a friend of mine tell me, like, you know, I listen to it sometimes in the car or after work. Like, you know, I get in the car, just, you know, putting my things away. I listen to it before I get started driving.
Yeah.
And one of the things I included in my introduction is, you know, I say, find a comfortable place and whatever. I said, do not drive.
Do not
close your eyes when you're driving, you know, focus on the road. You can listen to it, but focus on the road. You know, I don't want any car accidents and I absolutely don't want to be responsible for any either. No. So, you know, so there's that. I really do like that people are getting something out of it. As I said, no matter whether I wind up getting a situation where I'm getting 5,000 downloads, I don't have that, but if I end up in a situation where I'm getting 5,000 downloads per episodes, that's awesome. But if I can really find somebody that's truly reached, like one person that I can truly reach with it, or two people that I can truly reach, I mean, honestly, like that's the job done, because who knows how many other people that one or two people can reach. Like if I change someone's day with a haiku and they go out and change someone else's day, you know, that's kind of just my feelings toward it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, I don't go chasing the numbers myself. I have interesting chats with people from all around the world. You know, a lot of them are networkers, you know, so other, some of my audience who are other networkers might want to collaborate with them. So if one person collaborates with one person, then that could become a joint venture that could employ thousands of people. You just never know, do you? You never know what the effects are of something. So I just think, well, just do it. If you enjoy doing it, do it. Don't worry about the effects. Whatever the effects will be is what the effects will be. You know what I mean? You can't control it. Just enjoy what you're doing and watch and wait and see. And luckily I've been told by people, you know, oh, I enjoyed that, or that helped me do this, or that helped me with that, or, you know, you inspired me to do this. Well, great. You know, that's the good feedback. And then, you know, you're doing a good job. But I do it because I like it, and I do it because I can, and I never go chasing the numbers. And I think, you know, you seem to be on the same path as well. Just do it. If you're going to help one person, you've helped one person. If you can help 10, even better. If you can help 100, even better. If you help 1 million, even better. But it doesn't really matter. As long as you're enjoying yourself and you're helping someone, and you'll always help someone. You'll always, you know, if you do something long enough, someone will find benefit in it.
And you know, one of the interesting things that I heard in one of the rooms that I was in the Club Pod room, which is a podcast room, or Club Pod club, actually, they have a bunch of rooms going all the time. Yeah. Anyways, with them, is I heard one of them talk about real influence versus, like, you know, the skewed numbers that social media makes you feel, you know, and one of the things I said, like, if you have, let's say, 500 people engaging with you, right? Sure, that might not sound a lot when someone's talking about, like, I have 200,000 listeners and so on. But, you know, the person said, like, the presenter said, imagine 500 people coming to your living room to hear you speak.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have 500 people in your living room to hear you speak, that's a lot of folks. You know,
you have 10 people in your living room to hear you speak, and there can be a lot of influence because those 10 people could be, you know, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the president of the USA. You know what I mean? You just, you know what I mean? You could be speaking to 10 people and you could be influential. You could be speaking to 2 people and be influential. You know,
absolutely. But as it was, like, you know, social media, you know, and of course, like, they have their own things because it's all about advertising in terms of social media. So, you know, so they need to have the numbers skewed in that kind of way, you know. But I know people even with like 10, 15,000 followers who barely engage with their followers.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just really like, I don't really feel there's much of a transaction. That's why a lot of times I ask people, especially when I come across people on Clubhouse that listen to my podcast, what are you thinking? You know, maybe leave a review, because that's going to help me be a better podcaster. Having 15, 16,000 followers, while that would be great and while I would love that, having 16,000 followers that all they do is listen and they don't really give me any kind of feedback or no engagement, I mean, that's not really helping me be a better content creator.
Yeah. Definitely. And I always think it's good for people to give feedback anyway, even if, like, they didn't love it, just say, oh, that was good. You know what I mean? Just put some positivity into the world, encouragement for other people. You know, you have all this, social currency. You know, you have all this social currency, and some people are spending like £1 a day. You can spend millions of pounds a day just donating your social currency to other people by giving them comments and getting involved, sharing their content, engaging with them, spending your money. You can spend an infinite amount of money on creating social engagement, but some people don't do any engagement. It's just like, well, you know, you have all this unlimited fund and you're not spending any of it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting because people do that, and it can cost a lot of time. And you got to, like, the thing that I find is, you know, people tend to be more conservative with their money and more liberal with their time. Yeah. And, you know, the money, you get it back, but the time, you really can't.
No.
You know, so I would say, okay, you know, if this isn't worth it for you and the other person, then maybe you want to reexamine. You know, so,
yeah.
But at least that's like my take on it. So I usually go and I moderate. I'm going to be moderating a room tomorrow. You know, about, like, that's a poetry open mic sort of room. And I love going to those things because, you know, you can't really, it's hard to really say, you know, I'm a poet and I'm doing all of this stuff without consuming poetry. Yeah. Right. Just like being a musician without consuming music, it's going to be difficult, really, because you're going to lose a lot of your way in terms of inspiration if all you're hearing is your content and nothing else.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone needs to be inspired by others, like, you know what I mean? So, in fact, I was going to ask you, what sort of poetry do you like listening to and who inspires you in that? But before I go into that, tell us a little bit about this poetry room. And, you know, obviously, if it's a regular thing, then, you know, this isn't going to be published in time for tomorrow, but it'll be published in time maybe for next week or the week after or whatever. So tell people the room and what it's all about.
Well, absolutely. It's so I am working with Creativity House. I actually just got a couple of contacts there. So, it's going to be one of their rooms, and they invited me to guest moderate, but I'm getting the feeling that they may want me to do a regular moderation with them. And the interesting thing is, so when I was at Clubhouse, and the same gentleman, Chris, that was telling me about real influence versus this social media numbers game, is he said, you know, he said, I remembered you in a poetry room. He said, you gave a poem called Confessions of a Mirror. Now, this is from my forthcoming collection. And it's something that I only really give in an audio format. So it's nowhere on my Instagram. It's nowhere on my Twitter. You know, this is a poem that I only have been performing with a collection coming out. And so he says, you know, I remember that thing. And he's like, that was over a week ago. And he's like, and I have 100,000 followers and all of these other people. So I said, wow. I said, you know, that's the one person I wanted to reach, I guess. So he told me, he said, get in contact with David at Creativity House. And, you know, you were in his room and so on. See what's going on there. Anyways, long story short, I was able to get this. He says, you know, hey, I need you to co-moderate this. It's one of the bigger poetry rooms on Clubhouse. And you really seem to know your stuff about poetry. And I'm like, ah, shucks. And he asked me to go on and moderate with him tomorrow. And to sign up for it, because they're a real club outside of Clubhouse.
Yeah.
They're a real club. They're a real creativity network.
Yeah.
So I signed up for them, joined them, and moved forward that way.
Yeah, good, good. Well, I'm a club that started on Clubhouse, but I've actually I'm going to do a real world event in August called Screw the Big Rooms in a Martello Tower in Essex. In August, so we're going to be a real world club that formed out of Clubhouse. But I always say to people as well, if ever you want to set up a room under my room, under Screw the Big Rooms, you know, I'm always looking for people to set up different niches, because that draws more people into my club. It also means that you can benefit off my club to start your room, so you're not starting from scratch. So if ever you want to do a sort of a random poetry room, or, you know, creative room or something like that, I'm always happy for people to do that on my club as well. So just
and see, I love like the, like, what really caught my attention with your club was when it said Screw the Big Rooms. And I said, yeah, you know, let's see what they're talking about, if you're having a really potent conversation. Because there's been some times that I've gone to, especially, you know, and this is not a knock on anyone who likes to go to the marketing rooms, but people who go to the marketing rooms, like, you have some of these huge marketing rooms with almost like 1,000 people in them, and they're barely talking about anything, or all they're saying is just really a bunch of business jargon that maybe a few people who graduated with MBAs might be able to understand, but it's not really giving too much to the general listener. So, you know, so sometimes I'll get confused and I would leave such a room, even if they may be giving good insights. So I thought it was awesome, because, you know, people were kind of talking about different things, from everything from football to Lebanon to poetry and whatnot in the small room. And I like that. Like, for me, doing a poem in a smaller room is kind of like, you know, when you have these big musicians, like, you know, like Rolling Stone.
Yeah, or you do like a small intimate gig, like, you know, and the gig is much more intense, like, you know.
Exactly. Like when one of my favorite records that I like to hear, records albums that I like to hear is the live performance that Nirvana did, their Unplugged performance, their MTV Unplugged performance. And, you know, that was, you know, it wasn't like a tiny venue, but it was a pretty small venue, considering where they were on the world stage at the time. It was a really small venue. You're talking about something that held less than 100 people, and they have acoustic guitars and they're performing their hits. And something like that is really just kind of gets you back into the enjoyment of the music rather than just the whole production. And a lot of times I feel that when I go into a smaller room like that, or something like Poetry and Discussions, I would just be able to really give that. And then if people want to ask me questions about a piece, it's a lot easier, as opposed to when you're in a big room, you just perform and then you perform your set and get off the stage.
Yeah, well, that's the benefit of the little room, is that, you know, if, for example, like I got some top level marketing knowledge I drop every now and then, not all the time, because I'm socializing a lot of the time, and they're my friends, and I want to get to know other people. But, you know, people ask me for advice every now and then, and I'll drop some bombs. But the good thing is that if I, unlike with a big room, if someone's dropping some knowledge you don't understand them, you can't really do anything about it. Whereas with me, you could just say, oh, Mike, what did you mean by that? Or whatever. It's interactive, it's engaging. Yeah. And so therefore it's much more it's much more intimate and much more, I consider, valuable. You know, I treat people like the valuable human being that they are, rather than just another number to sort of like, you know, get through to get through to someone else, like, you know.
Absolutely, because every number is somebody's life. And so that one person, you may have 50,000 followers, but to each of that 50,000, you know, that's their life. That's they're that one person.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
exactly. And as long as, you know, as long as you're reaching that, like one of my attitude towards poetry has even changed with the advent of Clubhouse. And just as it's grown and been able to host a lot of live events in the pandemic, which is what I think is the true beauty in the platform, is I was able to perform a lot of different gigs, a lot of different events. So I've been really sort of treating myself more as a musician rather than with the air of a poet.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like there's like a thing where you can like combine, say, classical instruments like guitars and stuff and play like, you know, rock classics and that sort of stuff. I reckon there's a way of doing poetry that you can, you know, make it sort of funky and cool and stuff as well. Obviously, a lot of rapping and a lot of rap battles is funky and cool and all of that. But but it could be derogatory a bit and it could be not very good content and all of that. But I think there's a way as well of, you know, sticking to traditional roots and doing poetry that way, but also, you know, coming up with some sexy poetry of, you know, hitting a bit of popular culture and making it cool, you know?
So, yeah, so, like, it's interesting you said sexy poetry. Like, so when my very first collection that I wrote, and it took me the longest to write, was a poetry collection called Taboo. And and that's also available where books are sold. And that came out, that was written back in like 2016. And it was really just a fixed form poem, really short poems, but they were like your love poems in the first half of the books and like your more erotic stuff in the second half of the book. So I always love to play with poetic forms as well and sort of just, you know, see what I can do with music and poetry. And even if I'm not using a musical background, I would give sometimes even just changing the cadence and how you deliver a poem can give the poem an entirely different feeling.
Yeah. And some songs are really good as poems, aren't they? Some songwriters are really poetic and some, you know, more formulaic or whatever, like, you know, but are there any sort of songwriters or artists who write their own songs and that you really think, oh, they've really
inspired me? Well, I can only one person pops into my head right now, and it's obviously a little bit before my time in terms of like his biggest heyday, but the legend Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
I got a funny story about something too. So, I was really heavy like into Zen Buddhism when I was in college, and so when I was doing that, I had, you know, they would do like different chantings and sometimes we would go to other people's houses and so on and just like have like a sort of like evening kind of chant or whatever with some friends, sit around with some friends and whatever else. And so we were in this woman's house and I'm seeing all of these plaques, you know, one or two platinum plaques and memorabilia and that. And it was Bob Dylan memorabilia. And that's when I was really discovering Dylan at the time of my life. Like the Dylan and the Buddhism had nothing to do with one another. So I saw that. And it turned out that she was Bob Dylan's assistant for a number of years back in the day. Yeah. And so she had given me a signed lyric book, which I still have to this day. I treasure it. It was completed in the 90s. In the late 90s. So a lot of his, you know, like post year 2000 work, more current albums, that stuff is not going to be in there. But the lyrics, I mean, you can just read them off as their poetry by itself without the music. So, Bob Dylan is one person who I would say if I can count one person that I have I've gotten a lot of influence from, it'll be Bob Dylan and then and the Beatles. Yeah. The Beatles was another funny one. I had it was a cannabis experience that I had one time. And so I woke up and I'm hearing, and I had my Spotify on at the time, and this is to go goes to show you. So I had my Spotify, this is a few years back, open, and it was just on random psychedelic stuff. And then I'm hearing, I am the walrus, I am the Eggman, cuckoo, ka-choom. And I said, oh my gosh. And then I became hooked on the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, ever since with that time. So that's my more like classic rock, like late 60s sort of influences. And modern influencers that I have now, I have modern influencers in rock, and I have in terms of like hip hop. So like for hip hop, rap music is Kanye West. I think, like, you know, he doesn't suit everyone's taste, but he is, because like he's like, his level of confidence, his wordplay and so on, that's really, really the things that has attracted me to his music, is just like the level of confidence and the wordplay. So I would say there's that, and modern rock, you know, modern rock, I listen to everybody from Slipknot to John Mayer and Jack White. You know, those are quite a few people that I can think about, because Slipknot, some really heavy hardcore stuff, but Corey Taylor is an excellent writer. So those are the kind of music that's in my library that kind of gives me inspiration.
And are there any poets that are inspiring you or doing great things that you admire from afar or whatever?
Yeah, there are several poets that I tend to look at right now. So one person that she's no longer with us now is Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver is she was a legend. I mean, she came out with so many books and so on. She's like a female Stephen King of poets. In terms of the amount of work, the body of work that she's come out with. So Mary Oliver, Joy Harjo is another one. She was the poet laureate 2 years ago here in the States. So she was one that I look at, especially a lot of her interesting poems about nature. And as a Native American, some of the interesting things that she has going on. I also, another person that I that gives me inspiration as far as from a poetic sense is it was the book Wilderness by Jim Morrison. So there are quite a few different styles of poetry that I have been interested in, and I subscribe to, you know, poetry magazines and so on to just kind of get a pulse on exactly what is going on out there. I've bought a few things from a few collections from R.H. Sin. Now, he writes a lot of love and pro-feminine type stuff. So just really interesting things that come from him. And I check a lot of contemporary poets too, but as far as the ones that really give me a lot of the inspiration, I would say Mary Oliver, Joy Harjo, Bob Dylan, just to name a few.
Fair enough. And you've obviously mentioned where people can go and, you know, subscribe to some of your work, etc. How do they get involved? Do you get connected with you online? You mentioned obviously Clubhouse. I think you might have mentioned Instagram. But just give, you know, any web addresses or anywhere else you like to send people to?
Oh, absolutely. So I would definitely send folks to my Instagram. I'm working on a website. I already have the web address, but you're not going to find anything there just yet. The website is going to be seeonthepoet.com or the-poet.com. It will take you there. On Instagram, I am seeonthepoet. On Twitter, I'm Seon the Poet. Facebook, Seon the Poet. Clubhouse, Seon the Poet. So I've just made it pretty easy for you guys to go forward. Seon the Poet, I guess, is my stage name.
Yeah.
There's a rapper that kind of inspired me, in terms of like when I was thinking about a stage name, and he's Tyler the Creator. Tyler the Creator and Chance the Rapper kind of influenced me, as far as I'm like, okay, what stage name am I gonna have? I'm a poet, so I'll just be Sion the Poet.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's it. I just found my stage name recently. I used to have a company name, and then I marketed myself and did my own personal branding, Mike Armstrong, and I've got hashtag Mike Armstrong, which you can find me everywhere. But I actually got nicknamed the Welsh Dragon on Clubhouse, and I thought, actually, that's a good stage name for speaking, because I breathe fire into entrepreneurs and inspire them and educate them and that sort of thing. So,
the Welsh Dragon, that's dope.
Yeah, I didn't find the name. The name found me, but it's stuck now. So that's what I use from now on. Like, you know, Mike Armstrong, the Welsh Dragon, and that's what I'm going to.
Yeah, on the camera, I see the Welsh flag right behind you, the Welsh Dragon.
Yeah, exactly. So people don't know Wales as well as they do Ireland, and Wales, we're like a Celtic cousin to Ireland. You know, it's not far away, just over the sea, and everyone knows Ireland, but not many people know Wales, which is great for me, because it's like original. You know what I mean? It's going to be, I can bring Wales to the States and they don't know it. And I'm going to be the Welsh Dragon on the stage, speaking and inspiring and educating people. So that's my mission. But great to meet you, Sion. And great to have you on the podcast. And thanks very much for coming on. I see your hands are busy now, so I'm going to call it a day and say thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me on. I much appreciate it.
No problem at all. And have yourself a great day, okay?
You too. Have a wonderful day.
Cheers. Bye-bye.